You're listening to another hope-filled podcast from Life. For more information about our church, visit lifenz.org.
So today I want to speak to you a message called It Was More Than a Dream, Keep Rising Up. Now, this is around the story of Joseph. Some of you are familiar with Joseph. If you read a one-year Bible, which I do, you will have just recently read the story of Joseph. And it's a fascinating story found in Genesis, and you can learn so much from Joseph and the lessons of life that he goes through. We're going to read a little bit about how Joseph gets a dream, and it's a pretty powerful dream, but then Joseph goes through a whole lot of trials before that dream becomes reality. And I think that's the truth of how life works for all of us in some way or in another. There are things that God stirs in our heart. But between the dream being stirred in our heart and the reality of seeing it fulfilled, there's a whole lot that we have to deal with. Joseph was, to just set the context here, Joseph was the youngest son of a father who had a whole lot of boys. But things were a little bit dysfunctional because Joseph's father loved Joseph more than his other sons. This is not good parenting. And we're going to read about this. And so have a look with me at Genesis 37 and verse 3. It says, "Now Israel," that's Joseph's father, "loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he'd been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him." Verse 5, "Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more." And you probably would too when you hear the dream. Let's have a look at what it says. Verse 6, it says, "He said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves out of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it.'" Now, Joseph is a young man and he's not very wise. Can I just start by saying, you may get a dream from God, you don't have to tell everybody. That's not always wisdom, particularly in an instance like this. I'm an older brother. Do we have any older brothers, older sisters here? Give me a wave. See, as an older brother having younger brothers, if my youngest brother was to come to me and say, "Hey, Phil, I had a dream. I had a dream that one day you would bow down to me." How many older brothers or older sisters know that if your younger sibling came to you and told you that, you would look at them and say, "That may be a dream, but let me show you reality." Joseph had this dream and his brothers hated him, it says, all the more. His father not only showed more love to him, he actually identified that he loved him more by the outfit he gave him. He created this beautiful robe. Some say it was Gucci, and designer robe, and Joseph would wear it around proudly. Joseph loved this jacket. It says he'd wear it everywhere, and in a sense, it was reminding him and reminding the brothers, "Hey, guess what? Dad loves me more than you." Kind of annoying, really, isn't it? You have a little brother like that, you don't want to do nice things necessarily to him, and that's exactly what happened to Joseph. He had the jacket, he had the dream, but a whole lot of things went wrong from that point. The first thing I want to share with us from this story is that dreams cost more than the price of a nice jacket. I want you to think about that. Dreams cost more than the price of a nice jacket. Well, see, Joseph had the jacket. Joseph looked the part. Joseph got the dream, but just because you hear or receive a dream from God and you can look the part doesn't mean you can carry what the dream is all about. We live in a society today where everyone wants to look the part, We're all about the outward. We're all about the image. We're all about looking good. We're all about wearing the jacket. But just because you have the jacket doesn't mean you can carry the dream. See, what God had to deal with in Joseph was what was going on the inside. He loved what he had outwardly, but it was going to be what happened to the inside of him that was going to determine whether he would see the fulfillment of that dream or not. Fascinating thing to me is that right throughout this whole story, it really is a whole lot about Joseph's heart. Joseph's heart towards others, even those who've wronged him. Joseph's heart towards God. What goes on inside of you is the thing that really matters more than how everything looks on the outside. And this is what Joseph was going to learn through this process. We read about this in the book of Samuel, where it talks about Samuel the prophet going to find a new king for Israel. And Jesse goes to a guy named Jesse's house, and Jesse brings out all his sons, and God speaking through Samuel the prophet, saying, not that one, not that one, not that one. They all look the part. And then literally Samuel the prophet says to Jesse, do you have any other sons? And Jesse goes, oh yeah, I do have one. I mean, when you're the forgotten son, that's not a good start either, is it? Yeah, actually, I do have another one. Forgot about him. He's out with the sheep somewhere. Can someone go get him? Haven't seen him for a few days. Hope he's okay. They bring David in, and God speaks through the prophet Samuel and says, this is the one. And we're right there, we read God talk about how through Samuel, God, man looks at the outward, but God looks at the heart. I think we all learn this lesson in different ways. I know as a pastor and leading and establishing a church, you can be so concerned about getting everything right outwardly that you forget sometimes about what really matters. So when we were first starting our church in Cape Town, South Africa, we mainly were meeting in a convention center downtown. It was a great venue, but we couldn't get it every week. And so we would have to find other venues sometimes. In fact, one time we just couldn't get a venue anywhere, and we had church outside on a field and had a braai afterwards. You know what a braai is? We had a braai with some boerewors. So we ended up in a venue. It was the town hall. It was right in the center of the city of Cape Town, and it's quite a historic venue. It's where Nelson Mandela gave his first speech after coming out of prison for 27 years. It's kind of an amazing, iconic space, but it wasn't as big as the facility we were using. And it's literally right in the center of town. And so we had church there and everyone's showing up to the point where the building fills up. And the host team, the ushers, I'm not quite sure what you call them, but I'm sure you know the people who help everyone get to their seats, were wondering, where do we put people? And so they saw that behind the stage, there was some tiered seating, which must be for a choir or a orchestra or different things like that. And so they literally started getting people and putting them up on these kind of seated stands area. And these were people who were coming late to church. The last people to arrive. And they started putting them all up there. So you got everyone here and you got all these people around here. And I'm sure some of them had never been to church because, like, we're right downtown and people are walking past in the morning. Some probably haven't even been home, been out at a club or wherever. They've heard the music. They've seen the people. They're like, oh, let's just go in here. What's going on? This looks great. Hi, how are you? Great. Come with us. Next thing, there's people up on here just kind of looking around. Okay, the host, all right, I'm sitting down standing down. We're in the middle of the music, the worship time. I'm standing here just looking around, hoping everything's working, because we're, I think 6 months into church and just wanting it to work, wanting it to be right. We're in a different venue and you're checking everything out. Next thing, my eyes are drawn to two guys they've put on the platform, and one of them has a T-shirt on that is not, let's say, Sunday church appropriate. His T-shirt, right, and they put him right in the front. His T-shirt says, sexy mother something. I'm not lying. I wish I was making this up. I'm standing here in the front row trying to worship, looking up, and there's Mr. Sexy right here. And I start freaking out. You know, I'm like, what is going on? What's wrong with the host team? Like, why aren't people checking T-shirts? We should have a T-shirt checker. This is not right. This should not be happening in our church. People are wondering, people are, you know, they're coming, like normal people are coming, seeing this, thinking what kind of a church is this? And then my mind starts racing and I start thinking, you know what? People probably think that's the choir. We should have choir robes. Let's get choir robes. Let's just give this guy a robe or something. And in the midst of all of this, in the worship, I'm freaking out. I've kind of lost it in my mind. I feel like God speaks into my heart and says, who's in charge of this church? And I know I wanted to say, well, I think I am. But I knew that was the wrong answer. I said, God, you're in charge. He said, yeah, I am. And I can deal with anything that's going on here, including that guy and his T-shirt. So stop worrying about everything that you can see and just trust that I'm going to deal with the hearts of people today. And right there I had a moment where okay, you really are in charge. I'm closing my eyes because I don't want to look at the T-shirt. And I'm worshiping God. And I got up and I preached. And at the end of the service, the first person to lift their hand, give their life to God, was our sexy friend. Amen? I'm still on this journey of constantly trusting God because sometimes I want to take control. And I don't know about you, but I think all of us have this tendency to try and just get everything right outwardly and hope that somehow we're going to look the part, be the part, and everything will be acceptable to everybody else. And God's saying, I'm not so worried about that. Just let me deal with what's going on in your heart. Just trust me with that. And all the other things that you worry about, I'll take care of if you deal with what's going on in your heart. Joseph goes from having the beautiful robe, being prized in his father's eyes, to his brothers selling him into slavery because they hate him so much. They see him coming one day and they decide, that's it, we've had enough of him. We don't like him being around. We don't want him to be around. In fact, they want to kill him. But one of them says, we can't do that. So instead of killing him, they sell him into slavery, take his jacket, kill a wild animal, put the blood on it, and lie to their father that Joseph's dead. Joseph ends up in a foreign land. Joseph ends up in slavery. Joseph loses all his rights, all his privileges. Everything he's known as the perfect kid in the perfect home, experiencing the perfect life, is gone. He's got nothing. He ends up as a slave. Doesn't matter how good his jacket is. He can't say, hang on, guys, back where I'm from, like my dad, I didn't really work. My dad just gave me whatever I wanted. You know, it was a good life. I had this beautiful jacket, had a great life. I'm not really cut out to be a slave and to do this kind of, this isn't really me. He's got no options. Sometimes it doesn't matter what you have outwardly. It's who you are on the inside that's going to determine what happens with your life. Second thought here, and this is really key, is it's time to stop worrying about bowing down and start committing to rising up. This is a story to me that is far more about the choice of one man to rise up than a whole lot of people to bow down. And yet often, I'd read this story many, many times, and I'd kind of always seen it as this story of, wow, pretty amazing, you know, at the end of Joseph's life, everyone bows down to him. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if just at the, you know, you get to that point where everyone goes, wow, you're amazing. You've done this and you've done that and you're incredible, and people acknowledge all that you've been through and like they bowed down before you. Wouldn't that just be great? And some of us are thinking, there's a few people, I would love them just to bow down to me because of all that I have done for them. But this isn't a story of bowing down, although it happens right at the end, right. At the end, it's a story of choosing to rise up. Joseph chooses to rise up when it is not easy, when it is uncomfortable, when there is no one encouraging him to rise up. He chooses to rise up. And because he chooses to rise up, ultimately, at some stage, later, way later in the story, some bow down to him. I feel like today in society, often we're just expecting or wishing or believing that people should bow down to us. We're not going to bow down to anyone. We have this kind of this self that drives us to believe we deserve, entitled, whatever. Joseph may have had all of that going on, but none of it was working for him. Didn't matter how entitled he was. Didn't matter how much he believed he deserved something. The only choice he had was in a place of difficulty. He's going to rise up. And so as a slave in Potiphar's house, that's where he ended up. This guy named Potiphar buys him as a slave, and he rises up in that environment to run everything. He could have felt sorry for himself. He could have been a victim, but he chooses to say, you know what? Life has not dealt me the cards that I wished it had, but God is still with me, and I'm going to choose to rise up. Thank you. One person got excited. Anyone else a little bit excited here? That we can make that choice. You can make that choice today. In the South, you can make that choice. Online, you can make that choice. We have a choice. God is with us. Joseph is teaching us. No matter what's going on in your world right now, you can choose to rise up. I have a friend named Anati. He is an amazing kid. The first time I met him was when we had built accommodation for physically disabled kids in a township community of Gugulethu, in a school there. The school is for physically disabled kids. It's called Timbaletu. And we got to know this school, and we got to know what was going on there, and these kids are amazing. And so through a series of events, talking to the principal of the school, she's like, we asked her, what do you need? She said, well, really, we need some accommodation, because many of these kids live in very difficult circumstances, and if they could have somewhere to stay during the week, it will really help them with their accommodation. We thought, what a brilliant idea. Again, we're only a year or two old as a church. We have no buildings. We have no facilities. And she says, it'd be great if you could build something. And so we come up with a design of 42 rooms for physically disabled kids. Like I say, we are a church 1 or 2 years old. We have no property of our own. Can I tell you, building 42 rooms for people who have some kind of disability, that is building a hotel. So let's build one or two. We built something with 42 rooms. The cool thing was is that our Hillsong Church globally all got behind it and contributed to it. And we were able to build this beautiful space for these kids. The first time I meet Anati is the opening day, where he is already there smiling as he always does in his little room. He's a kid with cerebral palsy. He has real challenges. His mum looks after him. Lives pretty much in, you know, poverty in a township. but he has the biggest smile you've ever seen. Well, we got to know Anati, and he's just such a great kid that his birthday was coming up, and I thought, you know what? Imagine if we took Anati to the beach and we took him surfing. I know he's physically disabled. I know he has cerebral palsy, but I had a friend of mine who worked with people with disabilities and took them surfing. And I said to him, I said, hey, maybe we could take Anati. He's probably never been to the beach. And we spoke to his mom and said, hey, it's his birthday. We want to do something really special for him. And she agreed. And so we organized to get Anati down to the beach, and a whole group of us got him ready to go surfing. Do you want to see an image of him just before? This is us as he's just about to get ready to go surfing. The guy in the background lying down is okay. First time I put that image up, I'm looking at it and I'm like, hang on, what's going on in the background? No, I think he's just having the time of his life. Anati is about to go surfing. We brought him down to the beach, and where he's a little apprehensive, but he's pumped to give it a go. And so we end up with this big surfboard, putting him on and taking him down onto a wave. Would you like to see footage? Would you like to see footage? Actually, let's put that up on the screen. Here he goes. And a dog. Oh, what happened? And a dog on the front. Oh, there it is. You always need a dog on the front. Look at Anati's arms are up. He's cheering. He's loving life. He's just thinking, this is the greatest thing. And he's okay, and so is the dog. Look at that. If you're ever going to go surfing, take a dog on the front. It's just one of those little life lessons. Can we just put our hands together for a whole lot of amazing people who helped Anati to go surfing? And that's the beach 5 minutes from where I live. Don't be jealous. Someone has to live there. Here's the thing about Anati. You can look at that and think, oh, isn't that great? You know, everyone's looking after Anati. How wonderful is that? You know, just caring for him. Can I tell you, he lives a life, even in his condition, where he is choosing to rise up. Okay, and one of the ways that he does this, and it blew my mind when I heard about it, is at the end of each year, Christmas time, we do a Christmas shoebox appeal. I know you guys do a big kind of Christmas box appeal. Well, we do something like that where we encourage people, take a shoebox, take it home, fill it up with gifts, and bring it back, and we'll give it out to families or individuals in need. So we do this, and what I hear is that Anati, who is a kid who's living in the kind of conditions that I don't think any of us in this room would be living in, takes a shoebox home with him. Not for him, but for others. And somehow fills it up with really cool gifts and brings it back the following Sunday and says, here, I want this to go to someone in need. I want to help someone else. I think we've got a picture of Anati. Look at him with his smile, with a shoebox of gifts to give to somebody else. He is making a choice, no matter how difficult life may be, that he is going to keep rising up. And I want to encourage you, come on, in your life, no matter what may have happened, you can make a choice today. God is with you. I'm going to rise up. I'm going to rise up. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to make my life count to the best of my ability with what I have. I'm no longer going to live as a victim. Joseph could have lived as a victim. Joseph could have made a whole lot of excuses. Joseph goes from being in Potiphar's house to getting wrongly accused of raping Potiphar's wife. I mean, it goes from bad to worse. He ends up in prison. He's now in prison having done the right thing and ends up in the wrong place. And still in prison, he rises up. It says that he ends up in charge of the prison under the jailer. The jailer says, man, I can trust this guy. A guy who could be a victim, a guy who has every right to feel sorry for himself, a guy who feels more distance to his dream than possibly any of us, is saying, well, I'm just going to do the best with what I have, and I'm going to keep rising up. So third thought today is your pain does not define you, but it does shape you. Your pain does not define you, but it does shape you. Joseph experienced a whole lot of pain in his life. He got betrayed, got forgotten about, he got wrongly accused, he got left, felt lonely. His pain didn't have to define him and didn't. It did shape him, but it shaped him into a better man. It shaped him into a man who could handle ultimately what God saw for his life. All of us go through pain. The question is, how will we allow that pain to work in our hearts? I have just been through the pain of losing my father. Absolutely loved my dad. And for the last 2 years, in fact, on his 73rd birthday, just over 2 years ago, we were in a hospital room where he got told that he had a glioblastoma, which is a type of brain tumor, grade 4, and that most people don't live longer than 12 months. My dad, you know, was just a great godly man and was just a great example in every possible way you can imagine. And it's really difficult when you hear that kind of news. And you have to face that kind of battle with people that you love. My dad was told, well, you'll probably never play golf again. He loved golf. You'll probably never drive a car again. He was just about to go overseas to visit my brother and his wife and kids. You'll probably never get to do that. And yeah, my dad's a fighter. And to the best of his ability, he fought against this thing. And we prayed and the cool thing is he actually did get a whole lot better, and he did drive again, and he did play golf again, and he did actually fly overseas to the USA and spent his last Christmas with my brother and his wife and their kids. But sadly, this horrible disease ended up taking his life 2 years on. And it's a painful thing. And all I've done is said, God, I don't understand all of this, but I don't want it to define me in any negative way. Lord, please help it to shape me to be better in every way that I can be, to be a better father, to be a better pastor, to maybe understand other people's pain a little bit more, and to trust you a whole lot more with my future, whatever it might look like, and to make the most of every day I possibly can. Your pain does not have to define you, but it can shape you. Jesus, in fact, said this. He never told us we'd live a pain-free existence in this world. In John 16:33, he said, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Jesus is saying, hey, just remember that you, in whatever it is you are dealing with, know that Jesus is with you. He's overcome. And you may be experiencing some pain here and online or in the South, and you may be dealing with some things that you're like, I don't know how to handle this. Pretty sure Joseph went through that. But what I'm aware of in Joseph's story is that every step of the way, God was with him. And I want to encourage you today, God is with you. And the beauty of being part of a church community is you have a whole lot of people who love you. And whatever pain you're going through, you do not have to go through it on your own. But there are people who will support you, just like my dad and the church community that surrounded him and said, we are fighting this battle with you. It may shape you, but in the right way. And ultimately, it doesn't have to define you. I love this thought when I look at the life of Joseph. Let the process make you so the destination doesn't break you. Some of us want to get to the destination, but we won't handle the destination unless we allow the process to make us who God intends for us to be. Final thought. The worship team, and join me here. The dream had a bigger purpose. Dreams always do. But often when we're starting on the journey, all we see is us. And what God sees is a whole lot of others. Joseph had a dream, and in his dream, pretty much all he saw right at the start when he tells his brothers is him. Look at me. Look at what I'm going to do. And God takes him on a journey and says, hey, Joseph, this dream, it needs you, but it's not about you. There's a bigger purpose for your life. And whatever your dream is, it needs you. It involves you. You're central to it, but it's not actually about you. It's about how your life can benefit and bless and impact the lives of others. Everywhere Joseph went, he kept on rising up. Everywhere Joseph went, he kept building relationships. Amazing. Everywhere Joseph went, he kept trusting that God was with him. And through all of it, God continued to reveal to Joseph that this dream is not just about you, it's about others. And in Genesis chapter 50, we read how Joseph is confronted by his brothers because he's now reconciled back with his brothers. He's ended up out of prison. He was in there and forgotten about, but he gets out of prison, and then the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, has a dream. No one can interpret it. And they remind, one of the guys remembers, oh, Joseph interpreted my dream when I was in prison. And they go get Joseph, bring him to Pharaoh, the king, the guy in charge of the whole land. He's been in prison. He's been a slave. His life is a mess. And he's brought before Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, can you interpret dreams? And I love Joseph's response. Joseph's response is, well, I can't, but God can. He started to realize it's not about me. It's about God working through me. God can do it. And God speaks to Joseph about the interpretation of this dream. And the Pharaoh is so amazed by it that he puts Joseph in charge of the whole land. Amazing. Incredible. Joseph ends up bringing his brothers end up coming back because there's a famine and they need food and all the rest of it. And Egypt has it all. His brothers at first don't recognize Joseph, and then finally they do, and Joseph goes through this process of forgiveness. Wow. They sold him into slavery. They wrecked his life. They destroyed him. They attempted to in every way. And all Joseph does when he gets in a position of power and he could destroy them, because of what has happened, because of the way he's changed, because of the pain he's been through, because of the way he's trusted God, he's a different man. And when they think he's going to kill them, he forgives them. Because Joseph's father dies, and now the boys think, that's it. He was just waiting till dad had died. Now he's going to take us out. And you read about this, Genesis 50, verse 19. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph has become the man that God destined him to be. Through the pain, through the challenge, through the betrayal, through all the rest of it, he made a choice to keep rising up. Come on, today, you and I can make that choice. In the South, you can make that choice. Online, you can make that choice. Whatever it is that you are dealing with today, make the choice. I am going to keep rising up because my God is with me.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast from Life. If you have questions or want to contact someone about this message, visit lifenz.org.